So I think now I am less, I think it's, now I think it's probably not possible to do the VMA thing because, and actually doing the research about the VMA, I found that actually it's not only about the VMA of the disk, but it's also about the VMA of the network. And probably video card, I don't know.
Hmm.
So it's getting complex, the VMA thing. And the other thing is that, I found that they have, because they have this queue, right, and they want to deliver the interruptions in the same, at the same, at the correct rate, at which they are, simulating,
mm-hmm.
right? So they have a really low level queue to do that, and actually I read that they implement a queue for interruption with assembler code.
Mm.
I don't think they do any complex things with that. So that's, I think, the way they manage the VMA and actually all the interruptions
mm-hmm.
coming from the machine. Right. So the other thing is, I also read something about a checkpoint that that Zen does, and they have something like they record all the events that happen in the system, all the interruptions with certain benchmark, so that then they can replay those interruptions in the simulation. I don't know exactly how that works or why they do that, but I was trying also to see if I can find, if with that trace I can extract the information with VMA and how, right? Because there's also another way of doing this. So first, the PTLC monitor log the interruption event in native mode. So it's native mode, it's not simulation, so I don't know exactly how it works.
Would it be reasonable to send an email to those PTLSim guys?
I read this.
Oh, you're
and there is no response yet. I don't know if I'm having a response. I was also spending some time trying to think on how we can do this without the VMA part.
Mm.
So I was thinking if even the VMA part is necessary. Because the thing is that in the VMA, you have access to a complete page, right? And the thing is that even though, for instance, Postmark requests those pages from the file system and actually that triggers a VMA operation, even though that happened, Postmark has to access that page at some point, which means that we're getting at least those traces. And the other thing is that usually those VMA operations are for big, for a complete page, say, which means that and it's only one time operation. So in some sense, if we eliminate the VMA operations, the only thing that is happening is that we are, I don't know, that's what I was trying to think. What are we removing from our assumptions, let's say, by not having the VMA operations at all?
Well, what are we? Okay, I see what you mean.
Right.
I think by not having the VMA, the effect of that is that we lose the information about all memory accesses.
Right.
We only get a partial set of memory accesses.
That's right.
The
question is, how important is the one that we're missing?
it is probably important for IO intensive applications, right? So for instance, for Postmark, it is, if the, all that Postmark does is create files, read from files, write from files. That's all it does. And that every time it does, and that's majority of Postmark's behavior, right? It doesn't really do anything with the data in terms of computing or so on. So it's possible that none of the data is actually seen by CPU at all. So which means that most of the memory address space is probably missed by us. Missed by the monitoring part. So we see a very small subset of the address space, probably just the code segment and the stack. We don't see any of the heap or any of the dynamically allocated memory being accessed, and which might constitute the major portion of the application. We do not see any of the page cache that the file system populates.
We don't need all the operation of our memory, because the operating system needs to, so the way it operates is that it allocates a page in the page cache and send a request to the device to fill that page, and after that you need to copy that data into user space. And that operation we are getting, right? At least that copy of the operation of the read and write operation.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
So it means that we should see the heap operations.
Mm. That's a good point. And we should see the file system cache reads also, because the copy would require a read and a write.
Of course, yeah.
And that copy is not going through DMA.
It's not going through DMA. That's right.
Interesting, okay. Okay, yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. So we miss some writes to memory because of DMA, or some reads from memory.
Or some reads, yeah.
But even if the postmark is doing a write IO operation, it has to be first copied into
operating system.
It has to be? Or
there is no shared paging.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. So we actually get the only IOs that we will miss are the data that does not flow between OS and application, for any application. So if the OS does DMA on its own, let's say it does some prefetching of
that,
data
not
requested by the application, then we won't see that.
We will miss that, yeah.
If it does flushing, we will miss that too. Like a PD flush, we will miss, but we will see the writes to the memory at some point before it was flushed out. Because unless the page is dirty, it will not be flushed out. And if the page can only get dirty because an application wrote to it.
Yeah.
Unless there are pages which are metadata pages that are also, that will be seen because written by the OS,
mm-hmm.
the metadata update. So there are some pages which the frequency distribution will miss half of it. Right?
Exactly.
So if it accessed 100 times, we will only see 50 times.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I think it's okay. Maybe we can survive with it. And in the meanwhile, you can, I think with that information, with that discussion, I think we are ready to plot the graphs. And then if we, for some reason, are successful to get the DMA, then we can update the graph.
Exactly. Yeah, that's
but right. I think our observations will be more or less similar.
Yeah, I agree.
The parts that we don't see, though, is the video DMA, network some of it we won't see because it's the kernel.
Yeah. Because of the data that you copy to the user space is not much.
Mm-hmm. But if that portion of memory is, let's say there is a packet from the Ethernet, the operating system has to decipher the packet, right? It has to walk through the headers.
Yeah,
and
actually it has to read from the headers.
Yeah, so we will probably see some of that, although it doesn't get passed to user space.
That's true.
Okay, that's good. That's very encouraging. I'm glad we had this discussion.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and get the graphs. I think that's the next step to do.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do that.
There are four graphs, I think, right? At least at this point.
Four graphs at this point, yeah. So, well, the other thing before, because I want to discuss I also was, you know, taking a look to the graphs and see what more or less I'm doing in each graph.
Mm-hmm.
So before that, I don't know if it's a good idea to update the table with the new SSD from Intel.
That's an MLC. This one is an SLC. The only new one they have is an MLC.
Oh, okay. I thought they have for both. I see.
They have only the MLC.
Okay.
Oh, but I may be wrong. Maybe they also have... That article that I read only talked about the new MLC. Maybe they have a new SLC. I'll look into it.
Okay.
But their goal was to produce a low-cost SSD, and I think they focused on the MLC.
Yeah, but, you know, if you have those chips, I mean, the thing is that if you have good performance with MLC, you can use exactly the same configuration for the SLC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have a good performance. So,
in some sense, that actually helps us, right? I mean, the cost of the cost of the SLC helps us, the performance helps us.
And the performance, exactly.
Let me look into it to see if I can find if any new information about the SLC.
Yeah, but at least we need to mention that because I think, you know, we can say that we can, for instance, say the old MLC come in this date and
mm-hmm.
this other one come in this other date, so mm-hmm. we see that there is a fast development in these
mm-hmm.
kind of devices, and I guess that will help.
Point.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning.
So, okay, so about the motivation graph. So the first graph, I didn't know exactly what to do. Actually, I didn't understand again. I think you already explained this to me, but so here you talk about spatial locality, memory access pattern, percentage of memory references that lie within the same page on the path X references, spatial locality. So... Okay.
So you look at a memory reference sequence and you create a window of some sort of past certain thing.
Okay.
It can be a large number of references and then you look at all the references in this that to other bytes, to other addresses in the same page. So that is spatial locality within the same page. But also we are interested in, we at least for the prefetching idea, which I think at this point is probably hard to put in the paper, there's too much detail to
mm-hmm.
include the prefetching. And the prefetching would have required us to explore spatial locality across adjacent pages.
Right.
So there's spatial locality.
I wrote here. Yeah, that is not a problem of collocate pages in memory, but we need to collocate pages in the SSD.
Right. So the idea is that if there is spatial locality across memory pages, then there is a motivation for us to map those to contiguous pages in SSD also, so that we can...
Or this in the same segment or something like that. I see. Okay, so then these graphs would be something like percentage or frequency, some kind of frequency metric here, right?
Hmm.
And the x-axis, what would be the x-axis?
This could be a distribution actually, a CDF of spatial locality, some sort.
A CDF of?
Of all the pages and how much spatial locality each page incurred. So the idea is that when I read a page from Flash, I have to maximize the use of that page. If we can make an argument to the effect that yes, pages are retrieved once but are used over and over again because subsequent or adjacent addresses within the same page are referenced in a short period of time, then that's what we need to, that's the message we need to show. I mean, we can certainly talk about what kind of graph we want to put here.
Yeah.
There are many possibilities.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that because I want to, you know, to have a concrete graph. So I had some ideas for these two, but for the fold one and this one, I didn't know exactly what we want.
So here I think you can do a frequency distribution of spatial locality to, if we can show that there are more pages with high spatial locality and very few pages with low spatial locality, then that's a good graph to show.
Okay, I see. So what we want is to show that there are plenty of pages or and a small set of pages that absorb most of the accesses in a certain amount of time, in a certain period of time.
So for each page, we come up with
a counter.
A counter.
Okay.
To say, well, this page was re-referenced within a short period of time so many times.
And how short is that period?
How short is that period? That period is, in a sense, has to be the average time before a page is thrown out of memory. So if a page, after being brought into memory, is reused a large number of times before it is thrown out, then it has high spatial locality. So this is tricky how we define the spatial locality. But we could come up with some metric to say, okay, within how do we do this? There has to be some work on this already because this is sort of the foundation of demand paging, right? The whole idea of demand paging.
Well, this could be something related to the Denning work, the working set.
Yeah, I don't think Denning actually talks about this, but. So if you think about demand paging, the idea is that when there is a memory reference, you bring in an entire page.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption is that bringing in the entire page is useful because there will be other references to the same page in the near future. Or before this page actually gets evicted from memory. Because if you're bringing in a page only for the single memory reference and then throwing it away, then it's too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You want to amortize the cost of demand paging across multiple memory references.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think more about this because at this point what you can do is just write a script that given some sort of window will come up with a count for each page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? And I think that basic script will probably have to be modified.
Okay. That makes sense.
To do whatever it is that we are doing. And one of the concerns I have this at this point is that because of the volume of data that we have to write, we probably will have to write very efficient code to process
the
data.
Thinking about C, so. No scraping, but see. Probably it's better.
And you might want to think about running it on one of the big memory machines like Stort. I don't know if you already know about those machines or not, but they have large.
I know about those machines, but I'm wondering if that is really necessary. I know that, for instance, in the Postmark, the trace was only 200 megabytes, so it was not very big. So I don't know about another workloads we run, but at least this one seems really, really small. Because it's the misses of L3 cache, so.
Now, this Postmark workload that you ran, you said it ran only for 4 seconds, right?
Actually, I didn't try again, but the first time I tried, it ran for 4 seconds in native and ran for 2 hours in the simulation. But I need to run in native again to see, to corroborate this number.
Okay. Yeah, I think the other thing we have to do in parallel is to run other workloads. And the choice of the workload is something that needs to be done carefully. Maybe the BLTK workload is a reasonable workload. Maybe you want to look into that. Possibly the web server, maybe.
I'm thinking about, because in BLTK the problem is that you have to compile the whole kernel. And that would take a lot of time in simulation. So can we modify the BLTK to do it instead with the kernel doing with something else, like, I don't know, a small code instead of the whole kernel?
That would be changing the BLTK benchmark, as long as we specified in the paper. That's good enough. We cannot then say that we did BLTK. We have to say this is a modified BLTK.
You know what? BLTK actually needs the X system.
Both the developer and the...
Because the thing is that they use the X library to simulate the keyword. They generate the events of using the keyword. So I don't know if we can do that in the console. See what I mean?
But the keyboard for developer?
Because
they use some Emacs or something like that.
They use the
VI.
VI in a console, but in X. Because the thing is that I don't know if you can do that in the
console. Why don't you try it and find out if that actually works as a console workload, then we can possibly modify it to do something less stressful.
Or we can also see if we can do something like BLTK by our own.
Might take a lot of effort.
No, I don't think so. The only thing we have to do is to, find a way of sending keyword signals somehow.
We have to then very carefully examine how BLTK was developed, and then make sure that we follow the same properties. Otherwise, we had to go through a lengthy explanation of why we chose certain applications, why we had so much idle time, and all those details. By choosing an established benchmark, we are avoiding all those questions. Right?
Yeah, but now that I think about it, I think they need an X to run, even the developer. Okay. Anyway, so we can discuss this next Monday. I don't know if you prefer that or we should go briefly on it.
We could discuss it over email as well.
Okay. That's fine.
I think most of these are, for instance,
Well, let's discuss at least what I have here. So you have system memory in non-uniform access. Memory page access is frequency distribution for multiple workloads. Okay, so I said that we should do a CDF where we have in the x-axis the percentage of usage. I don't know if this makes sense. I don't remember what.
No, on the x-axis, you should probably have access frequency.
Oh, the number.
Yeah, access frequency. Number of references.
Number of references.
And on the y-axis is probability that it is less than or equal to that value.
Which is.
So that's a regular distribution.
It's a regular distribution, okay.
Yeah, you can do a regular distribution too, that's fine. Maybe that'll be better. And then the next one is memory bandwidth requirements for cold data. So let's assume that 20% of the pages or 25% of the pages are the ones that are, the top 25% are in memory.
Right.
And then what is the bandwidth requirement for the other? So once you filter out all those memory accesses, what is what memory bandwidth requires?
Yeah, so one question I have here is that we need to define what is cold data.
So we can say that all, we can just take a simple definition of cold data here and say that
it's, the
lower 75% is cold data.
Okay.
Or lower 80%, either way it's fine.
Okay, so what I did here was to, in the x-axis we have the workload, and the y-axis we have the bandwidth that that workload needed for the call data.
Yeah.
And this case was a CDF of under-provisioned memory system.
And this can actually be normalized in some sense. So for all the workloads, you can have a normalized, so they don't have different frequency distributions. Or scales.
Oh, I see. Okay. Normalizing the number of references.
Yeah.
Okay. For all the workloads.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this one, this is observation 4, I guess, a traditional virtual memory system with a disk operation. A small amount of memory leads to an acceptable performance degradation.
Yeah, this is, how do we do this?
CDF of under provisioned memory system. So this is only a swap system?
With a much smaller memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is harder to And this is the CDF is the access time.
CDF of memory access times.
Right. That's always. I mean. We need to
require the simulator to be visible.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I said, the other day is to estimate based on, because if we assume a constant time of. If we assume a constant time of access of memory and a constant time of page miss or page demanding, then we could have some kind of some kind of distribution that is okay. All pages like this, and then all pages like this. But I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, it gives you an estimate of how bad it is. So we at the end we could. End up with unexpected.
Yeah.
I don't know if we need a graph for this actually.
I think we will probably end up doing this experiment anyway for the results using the simulator, except that instead of SSD we'll use disk. And since we are going to implement it anyway, we'll have this graph. So at this point you can potentially postpone the construction of the graph.
Okay.
We'll just focus on the first three.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. That's the comments I have for today. And I guess then the other task is to think about this, how to do this.
Yeah.